Last time we talked about two-dimensional curvilinear coordinates, and we used polar coordinates as an example. This time we're going to talk about three-dimensional coordinate systems, not all of them. I will pick and choose just a few useful examples. In general, the coordinates will be labeled by Qs, Q1, Q2, and Q3. We need three labels to locate a point in three-dimensional space. And along with each of the Qs, there will be unit vectors, and so E1 hat will point in the direction of increasing Q1, and the same for the others. E2 hat will point in the direction of increasing Q2, and so on. These unit vectors are orthogonal and normalized, and so if you take the dot product of E hat I with E hat J, where I and J can be 1, 2, or 3 independently of each other, then you'll get 1 if I is equal to J, and 0 if they're different, and that symbol occurs so often it has a special name. That's the Kronecker delta of I and J that you've seen before. There are also scale functions, or what are called scale factors, that I will explain by example when we start looking at different coordinate systems. The reason you may not have encountered these before is that in the system you're most familiar with, three-dimensional Cartesian coordinates, X, Y, Z, all of the H's are 1. HX is 1, HY is 1, HZ is 1. But in these other coordinate systems, the unit vectors can depend on where you are in the space. Again, that's different from Cartesian coordinates. In Cartesian coordinates, the unit vector along the X direction, which you may have previously called I hat, doesn't care about where you are in the space. It always points along the x direction. It's one unit long, and it doesn't matter where in the three-dimensional space you are. But for the other coordinate systems, the unit vectors do depend on your location in the space, and I'll show you some examples coming up. And then also, these scale functions or scale factors can also depend on the three coordinates, q1 and q2 and q3. Okay, just to give you an example, here is a list from MathWorld's page of different coordinate systems. And so the first one is the Cartesian one that you're most familiar with. And then you may have seen before in your other classes, circular cylindrical coordinates, and surely spherical coordinates. Because if the problem has spherical symmetry, like a point charge or a ball of charge in electrostatics, then spherical coordinates are the proper tool for the job. You could solve any problem using any of the coordinate systems, but if you choose, for example, if you have a spherical problem and you choose Cartesian coordinates, the calculations are going to be cumbersome. They simplify if you choose spherical coordinates. And in the same way, if you had to solve a complicated problem between two three-dimensional ellipsoids, you could solve that problem in Cartesian coordinates. You could solve it in spherical coordinates. You could solve it in cylindrical coordinates. But if you're dealing with ellipsoids, then maybe you should choose ellipsoidal coordinates just to make your life easy. So these are 11 coordinate systems in which you can solve the Helmholtz differential equation. The Laplace equation has two more systems, bispherical and toroidal, in which the systems separate. We'll come back to this later on in the course when we talk about separation of variables. But right now, just be aware that there are more than just the three that we're going to talk about. Okay, Cartesian first. In Cartesian coordinates, the Q1, Q2, and Q3 are simply X, Y, and Z. Sometimes it's useful to use index notation. And so X is X1, Y is X2, Z is X3, and sometimes X is replaced by R. So X is R1, Y is R2, and Z is R3. And then there are unit vectors, E1 hat, E2 hat, E3 hat. Those are the familiar I hat, J hat, K hat from your intro physics course, also called X hat, Y hat, Z hat, also E sub X hat, E sub Y hat, E sub Z hat. Again, they're used almost interchangeably, and you should be aware of all of the conventions. And then the scale functions or scale factors for Cartesian coordinates are all 1, and so they're invisible. For example, when you do a three-dimensional volume integral in Cartesian coordinates, the little piece of volume, the infinitesimal volume dv, is written as dx, dy, dz, but really there's an h in front of all of those terms, and so the dx term is hx dx, but the hx is 1, and so it disappears and you never saw it before, and the same in the y and z directions. All right, let's do a different example. How about spherical polar coordinates? Here, three coordinates, q1, q2, and q3, are going to be in order, r, theta, and phi. So q1 is r, q2 is theta, q3 is phi. And the reason I'm specifying the order is because I want this to be a right-handed system. You don't need to do that. You could work with a left-handed coordinate system, but someone a long time ago made the choice, and so we all use right-handed systems. I'm also going to use the physics convention for the angles. The polar angle is what I'm calling theta, and that's the one that is zero at the North Pole, and then it is pi over 2 radians or 90 degrees at the equator, and then it is pi radians or 180 degrees at the South Pole. And then the other angle, the one that goes all the way around the circle from 0 to 2 pi radians, I will call phi. That's the azimuthal angle. The mathematicians have these two symbols exactly switched. So they call phi the polar angle and theta the azimuthal angle. Neither the mathematicians nor the physicists are willing to change. And so you just have to be careful and be aware of what class you're taking and which definition they're using. Okay, along with these three coordinates, r, theta, and phi, there are unit vectors. And so e sub r hat, we met last time in two dimensions. That's a vector that points in the direction of increasing r. In other words, it points away from the origin, but now it's going to point away from the origin in three-dimensional space. And e sub theta is a unit vector in the direction of increasing theta. Well, theta is zero at the North Pole, and it increases as you go toward the south. And so e theta would point, for example, if you're at the North Pole, e theta would point in this direction to the right. If you're at the equator, e theta would point down. If you're at the South Pole, e theta would, well, I don't know what it would do at the South Pole. It's ambiguous because no matter which direction you take, you're going to go away from the South Pole, and the angle will get smaller. So e theta is not defined at the South Pole. And then e phi is a unit vector that points in the direction of increasing phi. And again, someone had to choose a convention. And so if you're looking down on the sphere, this point right here is the North Pole. That would be this point right here in the upper diagram. If you're looking at the sphere this way, then e phi is defined to be counterclockwise. Again, somebody could have chosen a long time ago to make it clockwise, but they chose counterclockwise. Okay, and then this diagram illustrates that all of the unit vectors depend on where you are in the space, and so let's look at ER. ER points away from the origin, and so if you're at the North Pole, ER points in this direction. If you're at the equator, ER points away from the origin. If you're at the South Pole, it points away from the origin. But all these red vectors have different directions. They all have the same length. They're all unit vectors. They're all length one. But the direction in which they point depends on where you are in the three-dimensional space. And the same for the other two unit vectors as well. E theta will point in different directions. E phi will point in different directions depending on where you are in the space. It's possible that the unit vectors could depend on all three coordinates, r, theta, and phi. Er hat happens not to depend on r. It only depends on latitude and longitude. It depends on these two angles, the polar angle and the azimuthal angle. It doesn't care about how far away you are from the origin, okay? Because the direction is just going to point away from the origin and have length one. So there's no r dependence in here. To contrast what I was saying before, in Cartesian coordinates, the i-hat unit vector always points one unit long in the direction of increasing x, and it doesn't matter where you are in the space, and so the i-hat unit vector is a constant. That makes things nice and simple in Cartesian coordinates. But the in spherical coordinates, the other unit vectors do depend on where you are in the space. Just to give you another example, imagine that the Earth is a sphere, and if the origin is the center of the Earth, then ER would be locally up, that is locally opposite to the direction of the gravitational field. So wherever you're standing on planet Earth, ER is up toward the sky. E theta is always locally south. So wherever you're standing on the planet, except for the South Pole, E theta points toward the south. And there's also an ambiguity at the North Pole, because if you're at the North Pole, then every direction is toward the south. And so again, at the two poles, E theta is not defined, but anywhere else it is. And E phi is locally east. This unit vector also has a problem at the north and south poles. East and west don't have any meaning if you're at the poles, but those are only two points out of an infinity of points on the sphere. So everywhere else, the unit vectors are defined. And what does it mean for the system to be right-handed? Well, in order, ER hat, E theta hat, and E phi hat form a right-handed system. And so if you hold your right hand with your index finger straight and your middle finger at 90 degrees, and then your thumb 90 degrees away from both your index finger and your middle finger, your index finger represents the first vector, so that would be ER hat. Your middle finger represents the second vector, that would be E theta hat, and then your thumb is the third unit vector, E phi hat. That's a right-handed system. The same thing will work for Cartesian coordinates. If your index finger is X hat, then your middle finger is Y hat, and your thumb is Z hat. So that's another right-handed system. All right, now I want to derive the scale factors for you. And you may, in your math class, have encountered another way to do this. If you're familiar with the Jacobian determinant, and you know how to use that trick to get the scale factors, then by all means, go ahead and continue to use that. This is just another way. I think this way is a little bit more physical, a little bit easier to understand where it's coming from, instead of using a formula like a black box where you don't know what's going on. So I will look at this three-dimensional line element, ds. Ds is infinitesimal in size. It's not a unit vector. It's really, really extraordinarily tiny. So that's the same d from calculus. It's very tiny, and it is a vector. So it has, in three dimensions, it has three components. And it points in the x direction. It points a little tiny length dx along I hat, and then another infinitesimal dy along j hat, and another infinitesimal along k hat. And this is what I was saying before about index notation. Instead of labeling the coordinates x, y, and z, sometimes it's useful to call them x1, x2, and x3, because then I can represent this sum of the three infinitesimals this way in summation notation. So dx1 is just dx, e hat 1 is I hat, and the same for the other two coordinates. All right, now the trick to deriving the scale functions or the scale factors is to consider this line element in green dotted into itself. So the length of the line element squared is ds vector dot ds vector. And in Cartesian coordinates, you just have to take the dot product of this three-component vector with itself, but that's easy because I hat dot I hat will be 1, I hat dot j hat is 0, I hat dot k hat is 0, and you wind up with this scalar. So in Cartesian coordinates, the square of the line element is dx squared plus dy squared plus dz squared. And if you want to, you can take the square root of both sides, but there's no reason to do that right now. Now I want to do the same thing, but in a different coordinate system. And for practice, we'll use spherical coordinates. On the homework, I'll let you do this for cylindrical polar coordinates. So I want to find the scale factors h sub r, h sub theta, and h sub phi. How do you do that? You break out the translation dictionary. And so if somebody tells you the spherical coordinates, if they tell you r, theta, and phi, you can figure out what the Cartesian coordinates are. X is just r sine theta cosine phi. Again, remember, this is the physics convention. So if you're looking at a math book and the two angles are switched. That's the reason. It's a different convention. And then the Cartesian coordinate y is r sine theta sine phi, and the Cartesian coordinate z is r cosine theta. These are the inverse transformations. I don't need those right now. All right, now the idea is, let's look at this first equation for x in terms of r theta and phi. Take the total derivative of both sides. So the left-hand side is easy. The derivative of x is just dx. On the right-hand side, I have the product of three terms, and so I have to use the product rule. I take the derivative of the first term, and I leave the other two unchanged. So I get a dr from taking the derivative of r, but I leave the sine theta and cosine phi unchanged. Then I leave the first and third terms unchanged, so leave the r and the cosine phi unchanged. Take the derivative of this sine theta. The derivative of sine theta is not just cosine theta, it's cosine theta times d theta, because this quantity has to be infinitesimally small, and cosine theta by itself is not small, but cosine theta times d theta is infinitesimally small. And then finally, I leave the first two terms, the r and the sine theta, alone, and I take the derivative of cosine phi. That derivative is negative sine phi d phi. Don't forget the d phi on the end. And then without dragging you through the details, you do the same thing for the second line and the third line. And here they are written. So here's an expression for dy and then an expression for dz. Square both sides. So square dx and square this. And because there are three terms, when you square it, you'll get nine terms. The same thing happens in the second line. When you square dy, there are three terms, and so you'll get nine terms in the square. And in the last line, there are two terms in dz. When you square it, you'll get four terms. So 9 and 9 and 4 is 22, I think. And if you combine those terms, there's a lot of cancellation, and there's a lot of trig identities. For example, sine squared plus cosine squared is 1. Sine phi squared plus cosine phi squared is also 1. And what you'll find is those 22 terms reduce to 3. And here they are. So remember what we did. We squared the left-hand sides, dx squared plus dy squared plus dz squared, added those together, and that's the square of the line element. That's ds squared. But this, the left-hand side here is done in Cartesian coordinates. After those 22 terms reduced down to 3, this is the line element in spherical polar coordinates. And so there's a dr squared, there's a term proportional to d theta squared, and there's a term proportional to d phi squared. Notice that there are no mixed terms. There is no term that has one dr and one d theta, or one d theta and one d phi, or one dr and one d phi. And that's happening because we chose the unit vectors to be orthogonal. All right, and written in this form, you can pick off what the scale factors are. So there's an invisible one that I made visible sitting out in front of the dr squared. That's the square of the scale factor hr. And in the same way, this r squared is the scale factor for theta squared. And this r squared sine squared theta is the scale factor for angle phi, the azimuthal angle. And so here they are. So hr is just 1. H theta is r, and h phi is r sine theta. If they look a little bit familiar, it's because you've seen them in the volume integral. In spherical polar coordinates, that little element of volume dv is this. It's r squared sine theta dr d theta d phi. And in general coordinates, it would be the product of the three scale factors. It would be h1 times h2 times h3, dq1, dq2, dq3. So you've seen this above in Cartesian coordinates. The volume element dv in Cartesian coordinates is dq1, dq2, dq3, dx, dy, dz, times the product of the scale factors. But because the scale factors are all 1, you don't see them in Cartesian coordinates. But now in spherical polar coordinates, only the hr is 1. The other two are non-zero. So this is the product of 1 times r sine theta. And that's the product that goes in the spherical, that's called the measure of the three-dimensional integral. All right, one more time to get you started on a future homework assignment. We'll do the same thing for cylindrical polar coordinates, and mostly this is to get you used to the notation that I'm going to use. Again, I need three coordinates to locate the point in three-dimensional space. and I will call Q1, Q2, and Q3 in order. S is going to be the radial coordinate in cylindrical polar coordinates, the angle phi, and then Z, the distance along the axis in spherical coordinates. And you can think of spherical polar coordinates as the child of Cartesian coordinates and spherical polar coordinates if they got married, because it has elements of both. This phi in cylindrical coordinates, that's the same phi as the azimuthal angle in spherical polar coordinates. And this Z, of course, is the same Z as the Cartesian coordinate Z. So the new one is S. S is not the distance from the origin, it's the distance from the axis to the point. So here is the Z axis. This is the symmetry axis in cylindrical polar coordinates. And S is measured from that axis out to the point, perpendicular to the Z axis out to the point. So here is one S cylindrical radial coordinate. Here's another, depending on where you are in the space, here's another. Okay, but they're not measured from the origin of coordinates. They're measured from the axis. Some books and some courses will call this R. I don't want to do that because I'm going to call R the spherical coordinate. And that is, little r is the distance from the origin. I don't want you to get confused, so I gave it a different name. I just incremented, I called it S. Another common name for the cylindrical, so don't do this, don't call it R. Another common name for the cylindrical polar coordinate is rho. This is the Greek letter R. You're welcome to use that if you wish as well. Okay, but I'm going to use S in the notes. And then corresponding to these Q1, Q2, and Q3 coordinates, there are unit vectors. There is ES in the direction of increasing S, that is away from the axis, depending on where you are in the space. E phi hat in the direction of increasing angle, again, counterclockwise, if you're looking down from the North Pole. And then EZ is obvious. EZ is a unit vector along the Z-axis, up. I'll tell you what the answers are, and then the homework will be a derivation, so you'll just have to show this. The scale factor for the radial coordinate S is 1. The scale factor for the azimuthal angle is S, and the scale factor for the Cartesian coordinate Z is just 1. And you've seen this as well when you do a volume integral in a volume integral in cylindrical polar coordinates, there is a volume measure dV, and that is S dS d phi dz. You may be used to seeing this as RDR, and then this angle is sometimes called d theta, and then this is dz. But I've changed the names so that this angle corresponds to the spherical azimuthal angle, and I've relabeled what you may have previously called R. I'm now calling it S. S is just this. S is the square root of x squared plus y squared, where x and y are the Cartesian coordinates. Phi is the arctangent of y over x. You may or may not have to adjust the angle by pi radians. And since z is already one of the Cartesian coordinates, that transform is very easy. So down here, this is the translation. If somebody tells you the cylindrical coordinates, s, phi, and z, this is how you get the Cartesian coordinates x, y, and z. This is what you'll use on the homework, just like we did above for spherical coordinates. So take the total derivative of both sides of all of the equations, and then square them, and then add them up, and you'll be able to pick off the scale factors. Again, after a little bit of algebra, there's some cancellation, and there's some trig identities. For example, sine squared phi plus cosine squared phi will equal to 1. Okay, and that's it for three-dimensional curvilinear coordinates. Next time, we'll talk about derivative operations in the different coordinate systems. So that will be the divergence, the gradient, the curl, and the Laplacian. Take care.